WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, J.T. LeRoy, is a 21-year-old writer with two books of fiction based on his experiences as the son of a truck stop prostitute. His mother was 14 when he was born. He spent the first few years of his life with foster parents. They tried to adopt him, but his mother sued to get him back when she was 18 and won. When LeRoy was 15, his therapist at a hospital adolescent psychiatric unit, Dr. Terry Owens, encouraged him to write. LeRoy's books can be described as transgressive fiction, filled with the kind of emotional and physical violence and sexual extremes that he's been exposed to. In fact, some of the content of our interview may not be appropriate for children. LeRoy's books have been praised by writers like Dennis Cooper and Mary Gaitskill. His novel Sarah is being adapted into a film by director Gus Van Sant. His latest book is a collection of short stories called The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. Although LeRoy is forthcoming about his life, he doesn't like to show his face to the press. He's photographed with masks or disguises and does most of his interviews by phone. LeRoy says his early life with his foster parents was very middle class, with lots of toys. Things changed when his mother took him back.
What she took me away to was a life where I really don't think she understood what having a child was at all. It was more something to have. It was like you might as well have a new bag or something, and it wasn't what she at all expected. And it was poverty. You know, she didn't have money. She didn't have a support system, and she wasn't trained in any way. She didn't know what to expect, and she never wanted to have a baby to begin with. She was denied being able to have an abortion. And she tried to have one, but they sent her away to have a baby and then offered her no support after.
Was she still working as a prostitute when she took you back?
No. When she took me back, she hadn't yet really entered into that at all. She was doing a little bit of dancing and things like that, but she, at that point, she wasn't. She was trying to work, being a waitress, and it was horrible. She wasn't making enough money to feed herself and feed a kid or any of that.
So she ended up actually working as a prostitute, working mostly with truck drivers, I think.
Yeah. You know, when we drive off and you pull into truck stops and there'd be girls just pulling down so much money just for climbing in a car with a guy, it just seemed like a real easy way to do it. And she was already dating, she was doing that with truckers, but it wasn't like official. You know, she wasn't thinking of it as being a prostitute. And then she did more.
Where were you when she turned tricks? And who would be taking care of you while she was out?
Well, there's a lot of women who work in truck stops, and very often their kids are just there. You know, we'd hang out in somebody's car, one of the people's cars, you know, or somebody had a hotel, or in the diner. You know, you'll see a lot of kids just hanging out in back rooms and diners, you know. So it's not like anybody really watched us. We just kind of, you know, there's lots of stuff to get into at a truck stop.
So you had friends who also had mothers who were prostitutes at truck stops?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like a whole little subculture, a whole little world.
Yeah, it is, and not that many people are kind of aware that it exists.
So did that world start to seem normal to you?
Well, very much so. I mean, I pretty much packed away the memories of my family, and it just became my present reality.
Did you end up having to do tricks yourself, having to turn tricks yourself?
I didn't have to, but I wanted to. I just saw that there was so much money to be made, you know, that I really admired how they looked and the attention they got and having that money and stuff like that. And I think that, by then I'd already had sex with older men. And I think that there's a way that when you're young, if you've been you've had sex already, it doesn't have any special thing to it or any sacred thing to it. It just becomes something you can trade.
Is this sex that you had because somebody was forcing themselves on you or because you wanted to have it?
Well, originally it was forced, but it became something that I couldn't really tell the difference between what I wanted and what was offered, you know.
You said you'd seen, like, the adults around you turning tricks, and they made money, and you liked the way they looked, so you wanted to do it, too. Were you also exposed to the other side of it, the dangerous side, the abusive side, the really kind of depressing and dangerous side?
Well, I saw my mom hooking up with guys that we used to be abusive. She was very attracted to that kind of personality, and if they were too nice, she wouldn't stick around with them much long.
Did she know that you were starting to work yourself?
Yeah.
What was her reaction to that?
Oh, I think there was kind of competition there. And
so she felt competitive with you instead of protective or angry?
No, my mom didn't feel... I mean, she felt angry about the competition, but she also liked the money, too. So it wasn't like a normal parent-child relationship. I don't think she really viewed me as, like, her child. I mean, I wasn't supposed to speak about her being my mother. You know, it was... that's why in the book, it's like I accuse her of being my mother, and everybody kind of freaks out, you know, and Sarah.
Why didn't she want people to know that you were her son?
Well, because she felt that men felt competitive, you know, and that... Also, it made her seem older and made her seem worn out, and that her parts was worn out, and it just wasn't sexy to be a mother. But if you're an older sister, that's much better.
So you were passed off as her younger brother?
Usually younger sister.
Why did she pass you off as her younger sister?
Because it was less competitive to men to be having a boy around. And also, if we were two pretty girls out, we were more likely to get free things.
How old were you when she started passing you off as her younger sister?
Like about 5 or 6. It wasn't a big deal. I mean, I wasn't quite... I knew what the difference between a boy and a girl was. But I liked wearing... I like being somebody else, being dressed in pretty things, and I like the attention. I like how she was towards me.
Must have been pretty confusing, though.
It was confusing trying to figure out who I was at any different time. Like if we'd go somewhere new, if we went somewhere new, I'd have to figure out or. Try to remember, like, what my name was, what sex was going to be, what her name was going to be, what our relationship was going to be. Because sometimes she'd tell me, and sometimes she believed in ESP, and that we used to practice ESP, and that I should be able to receive. She was the sender, and I was the receiver, and I should, you know, if I was listening good, I'd be able to receive the thoughts.
What kind of terms are you on with your mother now?
She's not around, so...
Do you mean you don't know where she is or that she's passed away?
Yeah, the second one.
Uh-huh. Were you close to her when she died?
No. She took off. She used to take off a lot, and she took off. I followed her a couple of times, you know, once I got into therapy when I was working with my therapist, but I followed her to Kansas City, and I followed her... to somewhere else where she went. I can't remember where it was. But it wasn't good. And she had hepatitis, and she wasn't dealing with it. She had abscesses, and she wasn't taking care of herself. And I feel like if I had been there, I could have made a difference.
So you cared enough about her to have wanted to save her?
I think about it all the time.
My guest is writer J.T. Leroy, author of the novel Sarah, and the new collection of short stories, The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is writer J.T. Leroy. His fiction is based on his experiences growing up the son of a truck stop prostitute. Before we talk about how you started to write, I'm wondering if you read much as a boy, if there were any books around.
Oh, yeah, I read all the time. When I lived with my grandparents, when my mother would lose custody of me, I would be sent back to my grandparents in West Virginia. And there we read, you know, the Bible, and I actually had to write a lot. I'd write scenes, you know, like take a character from the Bible, you know, like Joseph meets Moses, you know, write a scene, you know, that kind of thing. And I'd get in trouble for being too creative, you know. So I was educated pretty well with books. I guess there's this perception sometimes I've read about, like, barefoot West Virginia, you know, and it wasn't like that. When I was with my mom, we'd drive around in a car, but I used to steal books a lot. Sometimes I'd take them from libraries. I just always had to have books with me.
Did you go to school?
I did here and there. You know, sometimes when I'd be in placement, I'd go to school, and there were periods where my mom would try to be legitimate. She'd meet some guy. It usually didn't last very long, and usually I was placed in special ed because I didn't test very well, and I just don't test. I wouldn't take the test. You know, I just couldn't do it, and I preferred those classes because then they just leave you alone and you could read, you know.
You know, you mentioned that your grandparents would have you read the Bible and also write imaginary scenes based on biblical figures. It must have been confusing to go from your mother's life of prostitution to your grandparents' life of Bible reading.
Yeah. It was like going from hot to cold to hot to cold because she'd come and get me, and I would go back with her. And it made me pretty crazy. It was hard to shut off one for the other because when I'd be with her, I'd be judging it through the lens of sin and hell because I was street preaching too. And if she heard any of that from me, it was not a good thing. So I had to be careful. And then I'd be with her and I'd have words coming out of my mouth and speak a different kind of language that if when I went back with my grandparents, if I was speaking that way, it was not a good thing. So I just had to cut parts off.
How did you start to write?
When I was with my mom, I used to have notebooks, and once I was writing stuff because I just felt like I was filming everything. I used to watch a lot of movies too, and I'd spend some days, you know, where you go into like a Cineplex, and I would just go from movie to movie and spend all day and all night there. I just really liked the feeling. It made me feel less lonely that I was narrating like a film or something. And I used to start to write it, but she once read it, and it was not a good thing. So then what I did is I got a notebook and I would just write one word on each page and then I could fill the rest in my head and know what it said. Like I could go back and read it like it was a book and she couldn't read it or say anything about it because there was just one word on each page. And I did that for a while but then I just stopped doing it when I got more kind of like out on the streets as I got older. And the way I started writing again was my therapist started asking me to write because he felt I had a problem with continuity between sessions.
What do you mean continuity between sessions?
I had a therapist and he felt I had problems with continuity between our sessions, which means holding on to, I guess, a sense of any of the work we were doing between each session, which was every day. And he kept asking me to write, that he wanted me to write, and I didn't want to write. And he was asking me to write for probably about a year before I started. And then he teaches at the University of San Francisco, and, you know, teaching these social workers that wanted to be therapists, that wanted to be social workers, and he knew how bad I hated them. And that here was an opportunity for me to teach them, to tell them what the real deal was. And I liked that idea. And so he asked me if I wanted to write something for his class, so I did. And it was like feeling the switch go on. I got the feedback from them, and it just, it was like feedback not based on how I looked or having sex with somebody and how I performed or didn't perform or whatever, you know, or it wasn't any of that. It was just from something else. And it was like this craving turned on me. And all I wanted to do was keep doing that. And drugs interfered with my ability to write. So I stopped doing drugs because I wanted to write. And it just started taking over.
So you started writing stories because your therapist asked you to write stories about your life so that he could show that to his students who were social work students, and they could learn more about you and other people, other young people like you. How did you actually get published?
Well, I just want to say, I think that his goal was more to get me to write.
And the other was just a kind of ploy.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How do you think he guessed that you could write?
Well, I've asked him, and he didn't know that I could write. I mean, he said that my language, like the way I always speak in metaphors. Matter of fact, when I was on the street, a lot of the other kids that was on the street would give me a hard time about using metaphors all the time. Whenever I would, very often when I say things, I see it and as an image, and I really want to be understood. So this image just comes up, and I would have to say it's like this, and then I give a metaphor, and they would just think that was the most retarded thing in the world, and they would really laugh at me when I would do that kind of stuff. And I think Terry recognized that in my language. But he really wanted me to write in order to have to be more inside myself and more reflective of what was our work. And that it was a tool to keep, because I couldn't retain anything he said. I mean, it was like pushing a boulder up the hill, and I would go off from seeing him and go get high and just do tricks and just self-destruct and do very self-destructive behaviors and often end up in a hospital, you know, from doing something that hurt me. And he wanted me more he thought writing would a way to be reflective and stay more inside myself instead of just running.
How did you first get published?
My work got passed from writer to writer, and before I knew it, I had a book deal and an agent before I even had a place to live. I never once sent out anything. I never asked anyone to send it to their agent or to, you know, I didn't even know how all that worked.
Once you started meeting from or hearing from published writers, Were there things that they suggested to you about your writing that were revelations to you, things you'd never thought about before that were really helpful?
Yeah, well, I really craved to get better. I mean, my therapist asked me if his upstairs neighbor was an editor, and he asked me if I was interested in hearing what he thought. And the thing is, because I was always asking Terry, well, what do you think? How could I get it better? You know, how could it be better? You know, my therapist, I wanted to be better. I would read authors, and I knew I wasn't where I wanted to be, and I could feel the limitations of my brain, like hitting up against a metal ceiling, you know. It was painful, and I so wanted to expand beyond that, and didn't even have the drill to do it. And he passed my work to his upstairs neighbor. His upstairs neighbor gave me my first feedback, and it meant everything to me to start to learn. There was a poet that Trick had turned me on to. He had turned me on to a lot of writers, and Sharon Olds was this poet, and it was the first poet I could ever read. I hated poetry, couldn't understand it, and she was someone I could read and be moved by and cry and just feel, which really surprised me. And he had studied with her and was friends with her and said, well, why don't you write to her? And I was like, no way. And he said, I contacted her and she wants you to write her. And I did. And he said, just tell her what you feel. And I did. I just wrote and told her what I thought. And she wrote me back. And we started writing to each other. And it was amazing. And that was when I was 15 when we started writing. And it was like the idea that you could write to a writer and they'll write you back was like the idea that you could write to God and they'll answer you, you know, or something like that. It just was surreal to me. And also that I wanted to know what they knew, and I was in awe of people who had that power of having a voice and expressing it so beautifully. It's like being a superhero.
My guest is writer J.T. Leroy, author of the novel Sarah and the new collection of short stories, The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is writer J.T. Leroy. His fiction is based on his experiences growing up the son of a truck stop prostitute. Although your work is really catching on, you don't make public appearances. You'll do interviews about your writing on the telephone, like we're doing now, where no one can see you, not even the interviewer, but you won't show up in person. When it comes to readings from your work, you'll ask friends who are writers to show up and read on your behalf so that you don't have to go to your own readings. Some people even think that you might not really exist. In other words, that J.T. Leroy might be a pen name or a hoax or some kind of extended performance piece. I've even considered that possibility myself. I mean, do you run into this a lot, that people think that this is just some kind of hoax?
Yeah, I definitely enjoy it. It's something that I can't say I discourage. The whole thing about the reading started very organically. I actually did a reading. I was in this book called Close to the Bone, an anthology by Laurie Stone, and they wanted me to do a reading, and I had never done one before. And I got up and I took enough drugs where I thought I could do it, but the words were blurry, and my hands were shaking so hard, the blurry words were bouncing off the page like worms, and I just vomited. And they thought it was performance art, and they applauded. And I think it's funny now, but at the time it was mortifying, and I swear to God I'd never, ever do that again. And that I don't have to make myself available. That, you know, I wrote out of irritation, and I don't mean to compare it to a pearl, but it's like the way the oyster produces the pearl out of irritation. I wrote out of irritation. And I write to produce myself oxygen. It allows me to live. And writing helped me get off drugs and helped me stay off drugs. It helped me function when I get in trouble when I'm not writing. And the fact that it's reached an audience is amazing, but was not the purpose or the intent.
So, why do you still feel it's so important to keep your identity hidden? I mean, at least to keep your physical identity hidden.
Well, the thing is, I'm doing more press and more stuff than I ever done before. You know, I've done photo shoots. You know, I did one for Vanity Fair and a bunch of different magazines. I'm on the cover of one of the biggest German magazines.
Yeah, but most of the photo shoots, you're wearing a mask.
Well,
I should point that out.
Well, I'm wearing, sunglasses are a mask, yeah. Well, you know, the thing is, it's like I'm not writing about our friend the mushroom or rocket science and how it affects our friend the world. You know, I'm writing about pretty personal stuff. And to be out on the street and have people come up to me and know that stuff. Also, the gender issues. I really never want someone to come up to me and say, I know what you really are, and be in that position where they could hurt me. Until I figure out what side of the fence I'm going to be on.
In terms of gender?
Yeah. And sometimes I like to go out as a girl. Sometimes I like to go out as a boy. And I really don't want that to be an issue for anybody else except myself.
Well, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you very much. I'm really, really honored, and I appreciate it.
J.T. LeRoy is the author of the novel Sarah and the new collection of short stories, The Heart is Deceitful Above All Things. His novel Sarah is being adapted into a film by Gus Van Sant.